And 25 hours earlier, George Dorn, quoting Pilate, asked,
"What is truth?"
Barney Muldoon, just then, was lounging in the lobby of the Hotel Tudor, waiting for Saul to finish what he had called a very important, very private conversation with Rebecca. Nkrumah Fubar was experimentally placing a voodoo doll of the president of American Express inside a tetrahedron. Their computer was still annoying him about a bill he'd paid over 2 months ago, on the very day-night that Soapy Mocenigo dreamed of anthrax leprosy pie. R. Buckminster Fuller, unaware of this new development in his geodesic revolution, was lecturing the Royal Institute of Architects in London and explaining why there were no nouns in the real world. August Personage was breathing into a telephone in New York. Pearson Muhammad Kent was exuberantly bawling a female who was not only white, but from Texas. The midget himself was saying,
"Rude bastard, isn't he?"
to Dr. Naismith, and our other characters were variously pursuing their own hobbies, predilections, obsessions, and holy missions. But Hagbard, with uncharacteristic gravity, said,
"Truth is the opposite of lies. The opposite of most of what you've heard all your life. The opposite of most of what you've heard from me."
They were in Hagbard's funky stateroom, and George, after his experience at the demolished Drake mansion, found the octopi and other sea monsters on the wall murals distinctly unappetizing. Hagbard, as usual, was wearing a turtleneck and casual slacks. This time the turtleneck was lavender, an odd faggoty item for him. George remembered suddenly that Hagbard had once told him anent homosexuality.
"I've tried it, of course,"
but added something about liking women better.
Goodness, was that only 2 mornings ago?
George wondered what it would be like to try it, and if he would ever have the nerve.
"What particular lies,"
he asked cautiously,
"are you about to confess?"
Hagbard lit a pipe and passed it over.
"Alamut Black Ash,"
he said croakingly, holding the smoke down.
"Hassan is Abba's own private formula. Does wonders when heavy metaphysics is coming at you."
George inhaled and felt an immediate hit, like cocaine or some other forebrain stimulant.
"Christ! What's this shit got with?"
he gasped, as somebody somewhere seemed to turn colored lights on in the gold and nautical green room and on that out-of-sight lavender sweater.
"Oh,"
Hagbard said casually.
"A hint of belladonna and stramonium? That was old Hassan's secret, you know. All that crap in most books about how he had turned his followers on with hash and they'd never had it before, so they thought it was magic, is unhistorical. Hashish was known in the Mideast since the Neolithic Age. Archaeologists have dug it up in tombs. Seems our ancestors buried their priests with a load of hash to help them negotiate with their gods when they got to Big Rock Candy Mountain or wherever they thought they were going. Hassan's originality was blending hashish with just the right chemical cousins to produce a new synergetic effect."
What's synergetic?"
George asked slowly, feeling seasick for the first time aboard the Leif Erikson.
"Non-additive. When you put 2 and 2 together and get 5 instead of 4. Buckminster Fuller uses synergetic gimmicks all the time in his geodesic domes. That's why they're stronger than they look."
Hagbard took another toke and passed the pipe again.
"What the hell?"
George thought. Sometimes increasing the dose got you past the nausea. He toked deeply. Hadn't they started out to discuss truth, though?
George giggled.
"Just as I suspected. Instead of using your goddamn prajna or whatever it is to spy on the Illuminati, you're just another dirty old man. You use it to play peeping Tom in other people's heads."
"Heads?"
Hagbard protested, laughing.
"I never scan the heads. Who the hell wants to watch people eliminating their wastes?"
"I thought you were going to be Socrates,"
George howled between lunatic peals of tin giggles.
"And I was prepared to be Plato, or at least Glaucon, or one of the minor characters. But you're as stoned as I am. You can't tell me anything important. All you can do is make bad puns."
"The pun?"
Hagbard replied with dignity, ruined somewhat by an unexpected chortle.
"Is mightier than the sword, as James Joyce once said."
"Don't get pedantic."
"Can I get semantic?"
"Yes, you can get semantic or antic, but not pedantic."
Where were we?"
"Truth."
"Yes, well, truth is like marijuana, my boy, a drug on the market."
"Whew, I'm getting a hard-on."
You too? That's the way the bawling bounces. At least with Alamut Black. Nausea, then microamnesia, then the laughing jag, then sex. Be patient. The clear light comes next. Then we can discuss truth, as if we haven't been discussing it all along.
You're a hell of a guru, Hagbard. Sometimes you sound even dumber than me.
If the elder Malaclips were here, he'd tell you a few things about some other gurus and geniuses. Do you think Jesus never whacked off? Shakespeare never got on a crying jag at the Mermaid Tavern. Buddha never picked his nose. Gandhi never had the crabs.
I've still got a heart on. Can't we postpone the philosophy while I go look for Stella? Mavis?
That's truth.
What is truth?
Up in the cortex. It makes a difference to you whether it's Stella or Mavis. Down in the glands. No difference. My grandmother would do as well.
That's not truth. That's just cheap half-assed Freudian cynicism.
Oh, yes. You saw the mandala with Mavis.
And you were inside my head somehow, dirty voyeur.
Know thyself.
This will never take its place beside the Platonic dialogues. Not in a million years. We're both stoned out of our gourds.
I love you, George.
I guess I love you, too. You're so damned overwhelming. Everybody loves you. Are we gonna fuck?
Mavis had said,
"Wipe the cum off your trousers."
Fantasizing Sophia Loren while he masturbated. Or fantasizing that he masturbated while actually...
No, you don't need it. You're starting to remember what really happened in Mad Dog Jail.
Oh, no.
Coin's enormous, snaky cock. The pain. The pleasure.
I'm afraid so.
Damn it. Now I'll never know. Did you put that in my head, or did it really happen? Did I fantasize the interruption then, or did I fantasize the rape just now?
Know thyself.
Did you say that twice, or did I just hear it twice?
What do you think?
I don't know. I don't know right now. I just don't know. Is this some devious homosexual seduction?
Maybe. Maybe it's a murder plot. Maybe I'm leading up to cutting your throat.
I wouldn't mind. I've always had a big self-destructive urge. Like all cowards. Cowardice is a defense against suicide.
Hagbard laughed.
I never knew a young man who had so much pussy and risked death so often. And there you sit, still worrying about being whatever it was they called you when you first started letting your hair grow long in your early teens.
Sissy. That was the word in good old Nutley, New Jersey. It meant both faggot and coward. So I never cut my hair since then, to prove they couldn't intimidate me.
Yeah, I'm tracking a black guy now, a musician who's bawling a white lady, a fair flower from Texas, partly because she really turns him on, but partly because she could have a brother who might come after him with a gun. He's proving they can't intimidate him.
That's the truth? We spend all our time proving we can't be intimidated, but all the time we are intimidated on another level?
The colors were coming back strong again. It was that kind of trip. Every time you thought you were the pilot, it would go off in an unexpected direction to remind you that you were just a passenger.
That's part of the truth, George. Another part is that every time you think you're intimidated, you're really rebelling on some other level. What idiots the Illuminati really are, George. I once collected statistics on industrial accidents in a sample city, Birmingham, England, actually. Fed all the relevant facts into fuck-up and got just what I expected. Sabotage. Unconscious sabotage. Every case was a blind insurrection. Every man and woman is in rebellion, but only a few have the guts to admit it. The others jammed the system by accident. Ha, ha, ha. By stupidity. Ha, ha, ha. Again. Let me tell you about the Indians, George.
What Indians?
Did you ever wonder why nothing works right? Why the whole world seems completely fucked up all the time?
Yeah, doesn't everybody?
I suppose so. Pardon me, I've got to get more stoned. In a little while, I go into fuck-up and we put our heads together. Literally, I attach electrodes to my temples and I'll try to track down the problem in Las Vegas. I don't spend all my time on random voyeurism.
Hagbard pronounced with dignity. He refilled the pipe, asking pettishly,
Where was I?
The Indians in Birmingham. How did they get there?
There weren't any fucking Indians in Birmingham. You're getting me confused.
Hagbard toked deeply.
You're getting yourself confused. You're bombed out of your skull.
Look who's talking.
Hagbard toked again.
The Indians. The Indians weren't in Birmingham. Birmingham was where I did the study that convinced me most industrial accidents are unconscious sabotage. So are most misfiled documents among white-collar workers, I'd wager. The Indians are another story. I was a lawyer once when I first came to your country and before I went in for piracy. I usually don't admit that, George. I usually tell people I played the piano in a whorehouse or something else not quite so disreputable as the truth. If you want to know why nothing makes sense in government forms, remember, there are 200,000 lawyers working for the bureaucracy these days. The Indians were a band of Shoshones. I was defending them against the great land thief, or as it pretentiously titles itself, the government in Washington. We were having a conference. You know what an Indian conference is like? Nobody talks for hours sometimes. A good yoga. When somebody does finally speak, you can be sure it comes from the heart. That old movie stereotype, white man speak with forked tongue, has a lot of truth in it. The more you talk, the more your imagination colors things. I'm one of the most long-winded people alive and one of the worst liars.
Hagbard toked again and finally held the pipe out inquiringly. George shook his head.
But the story I wanted to tell was about an archaeologist. He was hunting for relics of the Devonian culture, the Indians who lived in North America just before the ecological catastrophe of 10,000 B.C. He found what he thought was a burial mound and asked to dig into it. Grok this, George. The Indians looked at him. They looked at me. They looked at each other. Then, the oldest man spoke and very gravely gave permission. The archaeologist hefted his pick and shovel and went at it like John Henry trying to beat that steam drill. In 2 minutes, he disappeared. Right into a cesspool. Then the Indians laughed. Grok, George, I knew them as well as any white man ever knows Indians. They had learned to trust me and I them. And yet, I sat there while they played their little joke, and I didn't get a hint of what was about to happen. Even though I had begun to discover my telepathic talents and even focus them a little. Think about it, George. Think about all the poker-faced blacks you've seen. Think about every time a black has done something so fantastically, outrageously stupid that you had a flash of racism, which, being a radical, you were ashamed of, right? And wondered if maybe they are inferior. And think of 99% of the women in the Caucasian world, outside Norway, who do the Dumb Dora or Marilyn Monroe act all the time. Think a minute, George. Think.
There was a silence that seemed to stretch into some long hall of near Buddhist emptiness. George recognized a glimpse, at last, into the void all his acid-head friends had tried to describe. And then he remembered this was not the trip Hagbard was pushing him toward. But the silence lingered as a quietness of spirit, a calm in the tornado of those last few days, and George found himself ruminating with total dispassion, without hope or dread or smugness or guilt, if not totally without ego or in full darshana, at least without the inflamed and voracious ego that usually either leaped forward or shrunk back from naked fact. He contemplated his memories and was unmoved, objective, at peace. He thought of blacks and women and of their subtle revenges against their masters, acts of sabotage that could not be recognized clearly as such because they took the form of acts of obedience. He thought of the Shoshone Indians and their crude joke, so similar to the jokes of oppressed peoples everywhere. He saw suddenly the meaning of Mardi Gras, and the Feast of Fools, and the Saturnalia, and the Christmas office party, and all the other limited, permissible, structured occasions on which Freud's return of the repressed was allowed. He remembered all the times he had gotten his own back against a professor, a high school principal, a bureaucrat, or, further back, his own parents, by waiting for the occasion when, by doing exactly what he was told, he could produce some form of minor catastrophe. He saw a world of robots marching rigidly in the paths laid down for them from above, and each robot partly alive, partly human, waiting its chance to drop its own monkey wrench into the machinery. He saw, finally, why everything in the world seemed to work wrong, and the situation normal was all fucked up.
"Hagbard,"
he said slowly.
"Genesis is exactly backwards. Our trouble started from obedience, not disobedience, and humanity is not yet created."
Hagbard, more hawk-faced than ever, said carefully,
"You are approaching truth. Walk cautiously now, George. Truth is not, as Shakespeare would have it, a dog that can be whipped out to kennel. Truth is a tiger. Walk cautiously, George."
He turned in his chair, slid open a drawer in his Danish modern quasi-Martian desk, and took out a revolver. George watched, as cool and alone as a man atop Everest, as Hagbard opened the chamber and showed 6 bullets inside. Then, with a snap, the gun was closed and placed on the desk blotter. Hagbard did not glance at it again. He watched George. George watched the pistol. It was the scene with Carlo all over again, but Hagbard's challenge was unspoken, gnomic. His level glance did not even admit that a contest had begun. The gun glittered maliciously. It whispered of all the violence and stealth in the world, treacheries undreamed of by Medici or Machiavelli, traps set for victims who were innocent and blameless. It seemed to fill the room with an aura of its presence, and yes, it even had the more subtle menace of a knife, weapon of the sneak, or of a whip in the hands of a man whose smile is too sensual, too intimate, too knowing. Into the middle of George's tranquility it had come, inescapable and unexpected as a rattlesnake in the path on the afternoon of the sweetest spring day in the world's most manicured and artificial garden. George heard the adrenaline begin to course in his bloodstream, saw the activation syndrome moisten his palms, accelerate his heart, loosen his sphincter a micrometer. And still, high and cool on his mountain, felt nothing.
"The robot?"
he said, glancing finally at Hagbard.
"Is easily upset."
"Don't put your hand in that fire,"
Hagbard warned, unimpressed.
"You'll get burned."
He watched. He waited. George could not tear his glance from those eyes, and in them, then, he saw the merriment of Howard the Dolphin, the contempt of his grade school principal.
"A high IQ, Dorn, does not justify arrogance and insubordination."
The despairing love of his mother, who could never understand him, the emptiness of Nemo, his tomcat of childhood days, the threat of Billy Holtz, the school bully, and the total otherness of an insect or a serpent. More, he saw the child Hagbard, proud, like himself, of intellectual superiority, and frightened, like himself, of the malice of stupider but brawnier boys. And the very old Hagbard, years hence, wrinkled as a reptile, but still showing an endless searching intelligence. The ice melted, the mountain with a roar of protest and defiance crumbled, and George was borne down, down in the river, racing towards the rapids where the gorilla howled and the mouse trotted quickly, where the Sauron head raised above the Triassic foliage, where the sea slept and the spirals of DNA curled backward toward the flash that was this radiance now, this raging eternally against the quite impossible dying of the light, this storm and this centering.
"Hagbard,"
he said at last.
"I know. I can see it. Just don't fall back into that other thing. It's the error of the Illuminati."
George smiled weakly, still not quite back into the world of words.
"Eat, and you shall be as gods,"
he said.
"I call it the no-ego-ego trip. It's the biggest ego trip of all, of course. Anybody can learn it. A child of 2 months, a dog, a cat, But when an adult rediscovers it after the habit of obedience and submission has crushed it out of him for years or decades, what happens can be a total disaster. That's why the Zen Roshis say, one who achieves supreme illumination is like an arrow flying straight to hell. Keep in mind what I said about caution, George. You can release at any moment. It's great up there, and you need a mantra to keep you away from it until you learn how to use it. Here's your mantra. If you knew the peril you are in, you'd brutally burn it into your backside with a branding iron to make sure you'd never forget it. I am the robot. Repeat it.
I am the robot.
Hagbard made a face, like a baboon, and George laughed again at last.
When you get time,
Hagbard said,
look into my little book. Never whistle while you're pissing. There are copies all over the ship. That's my ego trip. And keep it in mind, you are the robot, and you'll never be anything else. Of course, you're also the programmer and even the metaprogrammer, but that's another lesson for another day. For now, just remember the mammal. The robot.
I know,
George said.
I've read T.S. Eliot, and now I understand him. Humility is endless.
And humanity is created. The, other is not human.
George said then,
so I've arrived, and it's just another starting place. The beginning of another trip. A harder trip.
That's another meaning in Heraclitus. The end is the beginning.
Hagbard rose and shook himself like a dog.
Wow,
he said.
I better get to work with Fuckup. You can stay here or you can go to your own room, but I suggest that you don't rush off and talk about your experience to somebody else. You can talk it to death that way.